Welcome to Bite Size Dental Marketing. Today I have Janet Hagerman. Janet, it's so wonderful to get to meet you. We were introduced by Aaron of A Different Kind, and you know, she spoke amazing things about your book. We have copies of it here. I know you're doing some coaching. You're a fractional hygiene officer. Tell me about your journey. I'd love to hear more about it.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on Bite Size, your podcast. I'm honored, privileged. I started as a clinical dental hygienist and practiced hygiene for several years. Got into consulting, and eventually I was invited to become the director of hygiene for a DSO. And at that time, DSOs didn't have much of a reputation. It was in the very early days. I don't even know if we called them DSOs back then. I don't think they actually had that title.
Groups or something, yeah.
But we had over 100 offices, practices, locations in three different states. So it was an interesting opportunity for me. I was hesitant at first, but I thought, you know, well, it'll be an interesting opportunity. I'll give it a try. You know, if it lasts 6 months, it'll look good on my resume. And so 6 months ended up being 6 years. And basically when they hired me, they had no job description for me. They didn't really know what to do with me. They just knew they needed some sort of hygiene leadership. Once I got past the deer in the headlights syndrome, you know, not quite knowing what to do, I had a blank palette to create this department, this hygiene department, create the team, create the mentorship programs, create all the clinical protocols, and eventually the business protocols. I helped create the clinical advisory board for the dentists. So that was exciting. I'm happy to say the team that I created have all gone on to become superstars in the DSO space themselves. So after that, you know, it's interesting when you're in that position, you have the opportunity to test things and get results very quickly that you don't have when you're working with just one solo practice. So you have 100 offices, you beta test an idea or a service or a product for 2 months, and you get a lot of data, a lot of information very quickly. And one of the things I've always been passionate about is case acceptance and how do we help patients say yes to dentistry, because patient education doesn't do it always. So I developed some protocols for that, and a good friend of mine said, write a book. So I did, Selling Dentistry Ethically, Elegantly, and Effectively. And once I left there, I just went and started doing more coaching and consulting. And then recently it became obvious to me that there are a lot of young emerging DSOs, sort of what you and I talked about, the number that we talked about, the growing DSOs, that don't have hygiene leadership. It's not in the budget at that point in their growth to hire a full-time director of hygiene. And yet at the same time, this is the crucial time to set up the structure of the hygiene department. So I function as a fractional chief hygiene officer to go in and help them not only develop the structure, but also help develop any leadership that they may already have within the teams that they have. That's sort of it in a nutshell, brings you up to date.
No, that's wonderful. Thank you for that. Now, as you've gone on this journey, are there key moments where you see how a DSO may approach hygiene differently than a single practice does?
Fundamentally, no, because the clinical protocols are the same. I mean, screening for periodontal disease is screening for periodontal disease, whether you work for a Heartland Dental or whether you're a single practice. I think the differences become, it's easier to manage one practice, obviously. With a DSO, the critical factors are creating systems that are reproducible, that are consistent and the same throughout the company, and also are easy to implement once you start acquiring new practices. So too often, sometimes emerging DSOs are eager to acquire new practices before they have solid same store growth, before they have good systems in place. So those are the types of things that DSOs look at. Where with private practice, I think it's easier just to work with the hygienist or hygienists that you have at the time. It's, you have a little bit more flexibility, I think, to make course corrections. Where with the DSO, I think it's just getting those systems in place are really hugely important.
As we move into, and still very much in the hygiene shortage of hygienists, and you know, temps are more prevalent than ever. You know, we're seeing a move almost to the nursing model of you know, you're going to have PRNs and, you know, temporary hygienists and things like that. Those systems that DSOs are building have to be, start being more applicable to the private practices, because if, you know, you have a lead or a hygienist or two and you're rolling in temps, right, you know, you're sort of left to their own devices. How do you see the market shifting? Because one of the questions we get regularly is, my hygiene production per hour is declining. I have all these temps coming in. My costs are rising. There is some imbalance of how to keep people accountable and how to keep those numbers high. What are your views on that?
That's a significant challenge for sure. It's really important to get really clear on the culture of your practice or your company, both. And what I mean by that is getting very clear in your core values and how, and your vision for what you want your company and or your practice to stand for, and then actually in writing, implement that. So in other words, if you say one of the things your company stands for is constant, never ending learning and continuing education, we're constantly upgrading our education. That needs to be part of your recruiting. That needs to be part of your training and your ongoing. So I think, yes, hygienists are concerned about being paid, you know, salary is an issue. However, they also want clarity in and purpose and meaning in what in the work that they're doing. And so I think if you have clarity from the beginning and have clear protocols, even if you're a private practice, one single practice, I temped for years. And I almost brought my, every hygienist brings their own personal culture with them. So if your cultures are not congruent, that's where you're going to have some challenges. So you need to find out what, otherwise you get what I call the culture du jour. It just so happens to be whoever walks in the office. But I know when I worked as the hygiene director for the DSO that I worked for, that was a challenge we had, because we, as you can imagine, with 100 practices, there were often times when we needed to fill in hygiene, when hygienists couldn't make it. So we created a group of temporary hygienists throughout the company that just like to work part-time. But in order for them to actually get hired on, they went through a little mini training program just so that we could all be congruent in our systems. So I think having that for a temporary hygienist to be able to come in and say, this is how we handle perio, this is what we do with adult fluoride, and on and on and on very quickly. So how do you take those systems and consolidate them into something that's clear and concise and easily adaptable? So those are the types of systems that I'm talking about. I think that just helps clarify the accountability. And I think it's important to do it in a very supportive way. Every time we rolled something out, all the accountability that we talked about was always presented in a very positive manner, as in, this is how we are helping you to succeed, to be successful. And another thing that would be, is really helpful, is for the hygienists that you do have to take two things. Take the time to ask your hygienist good values questions. What's the most important thing to you about your career? What's the most important thing to you about your work here at this company or at our practice? And get hygiene feedback so they feel like they're being heard. And then try to address that, try to address those concerns and needs. Also, I wrote a manual called Meetings Make Money, how the best practices have productive meetings. A lot of a lot of dentists are reluctant to have meetings. They feel like they're a waste of time. It turns into a gripe session and it never ends on time. So I wrote a manual on how to have good productive meetings. And one of the meetings that I recommend is a doctor hygiene meeting monthly. At the beginning, it could be twice a month, but just an opportunity for the doctor and the hygienist to sit down, do a couple of case reviews, make sure that they are helping co-diagnose together congruently, they're on the same page, and then just, you know, discuss any challenges and then look forward to discuss, you know, forecasting. Where do we want to go with the hygiene department within this practice, a business within a business? And of course, you multiply that over and over for a DSO. It can be a very, very powerful. So I think hygienists need to feel like they're being heard. And that goes a long way toward accountability. My mantra used to be and still is, production is a reflection of patient care. Increase your patient care, you'll increase your production. So most hygienists are dedicated to patient care. So it becomes our job to help them see the connection between good metrics, good KPIs, and the clinical behavior changes that can contribute to that.
You hit on something that's near and dear to my heart as you were talking, and your meeting makes money, you know, book. It creates this paradoxical situation to where as we see softening in the market or, you know, in the inflationary economy now, you know, begins to have people spending less, you know, these dentists are spending more and more time trying to be productive and less times in meetings. And paradoxically, that creates a situation where like you're in the business, you're not on the business. And eventually that's going to show in the numbers. Your production might be high today, but I'm with you. I think there needs to be well-run meetings in a practice from the daily huddle to, you know, more clinical meetings, like you're saying. But what do you think if there's a dentist out there who says, okay, my hygiene's not performing the way I want it to, or I seem to be turning over hygienists, you know, my team or they're self-reporting, they're unhappy, and I don't know what to do. Walk me through how you would begin to unwind those challenges.
Well, you're talking about several different challenges here. One is my hygienists aren't productive, and or my hygienists don't seem happy, and or I have a lot of turnover. So if you have high turnover, I would be looking at what is the culture of the practice? What is the culture of the company? Do you do exit interviews? Do you find out why people are leaving? Are you offering competitive price, you know, salaries? I mean, if somebody leaves for $3 an hour, more or less, maybe they weren't the best match. What are the characteristics that you look for in a good hygienist? So I would say, look at your culture first. And I would say, get a coach.
Yeah.
There's some great hygiene coaches out there. My specialty is case acceptance. And when I teach case acceptance, it's for the entire team, because case acceptance, you can't just make that the responsibility of the dentist and or the hygienist and or that treatment coordinator that literally presents the treatment plan. It is a team effort. One person, one poorly chosen word or phrase, and believe me, I've heard some that just made me cringe, you probably have too, can sabotage the efforts of the entire team. So it's critical that the whole team be on board. So that's what I specialize in, is communication skills. And it helps with the whole team. I've had clients tell me not only did our case acceptance increase, but our team got along better and we work better now as a team. And I've learned things about myself. One doctor told me, I've learned things about myself. And what I've learned is little changes can make a big difference. So, you know, that's a starting point. There are other wonderful, Inspired Hygiene is a great organization to come in and teach the clinical aspects.
I like Rachel Wall a lot.
Yeah. She and I go way, way, way back. Yeah, we've been friends for years. So I would say get a coach to help get your hygienist on board, and somebody who's going to help you make sure that you have a clear culture. You know, what are your core values? And what is your vision for where you want your company and or your group to go? If you don't know where, what is that saying? If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I think now more than ever, it's really important with, you know, financial challenges. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, fee for service or not, that relationships become critical. Mm-hmm. And as we become more technologically oriented, you know, this exciting technology of AI diagnostic, you know, radiograph diagnostics, I think, you know, Pearl and Overjet and NVIDIA is really exciting. And the more technological we become, and dentistry is very technological, mm-hmm. the more we need to sharpen our soft skills, our deeply human communication soft skills. It's deeply needed because in our society, where do we typically communicate? We're all on our devices all the time. And often, especially with younger generations, it's with emojis, emojis this and emojis that. I mean, I use them too, but that's how we communicate. And then we expect these same people to be able to come into our practice and look a patient directly in the eye and talk about $5,000, $8,000, $28,000 treatment plans, or have conversations with people when we don't have, we've lost that art of just communicating heart to heart. So I can get off on a rabbit hole there. You know, our brains, we now know scientifically, our brains are divided into two halves. One half is the very logical side, mm-hmm. and the other is the more creative, emotional side. In dentistry, we live in a very logical world. So when it comes to patient, what we call patient education, typically we jump into that logical side of explaining treatment to patients in very logical terms. It mm-hmm. seems to make sense, but it doesn't work very well because we know from surveys that case acceptance only averages 30 to 50% in this country. So half your patients that walk in the door are walking back out the back door not getting treatment. So lost revenue and patients walking around with treatment that needs to be done that's already been diagnosed. Studies also tell us that people make buying decisions, including healthcare decisions, not based on logic, but based on emotion. All you have to do is watch a few TV commercials to see that. So how do we do that in dentistry? Mm-hmm. How do we connect to our patients' emotions? So that's part of the case acceptance piece that I teach to DSOs as well as private.
No, I mean, it's been documented and talked about for years that people make emotional buying decisions and then justify them with logic.
Right.
You know, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, so I'm just, you know, in terms of your original question, I think these types of soft skills become more and more important, whether we're communicating with our patients and or communicating within the team. So we cultivate a culture and an atmosphere where our employees don't want to leave because they've got a great situation. I mean, a lot of studies have been done that have shown that people don't necessarily leave for more money. That's what they say, but really, it's the environment.
Sure, $2 or $3 an hour is not a meaningful change in someone's life. I mean, you may not even feel it on a check sometimes. Now, as you're writing your book, Selling Dentistry Ethically, Elegantly, and Effectively, and as you've gone on your journey, are there two or three key takeaways that you really wish dentists would embrace in 2024 here?
I think starting with culture and getting real clear on what you want for your practice, where you want it to go, is one. And just adopting some leadership skills, because we do look to the dentist for leadership. And let's mm-hmm. face it, a lot of dentists are not born leaders. They go into dentistry because, I mean, your whole world is in a little black hole. So I think just being transparent and with your team and getting their feedback is going to be critical as we move forward. Getting good being organized, being systematic in how we do things, that's the logical side, but also just really paying attention to how we communicate with our teams and with our patients.
A lot of times when you're talking, I hear flavors of Traction and EOS. Are you mm-hmm. are you an advocate of that model
I've read the book. I understand that it's been applied to dentistry. I know several people that have used it exclusively. They're good principles, and perhaps I've incorporated them unconsciously. I don't formally teach it, but it's certainly a good model.
One of the things that I heard someone say is, you know, if there's a challenge in your practice, that the dentist is the problem. And while that sounds harsh, it just in my short time in dentistry, and you know, 10 years, so you know, not forever, but I feel like, and this is an emotional statement I'm going to make, so mm-hmm. I'd love your view on it. I have no data. I feel like when we began doing marketing for these practices, if someone was a great clinician, they were going to be successful. Now I'm seeing they have to be a great leader, and they can be an average clinician and kill it, but the great clinicians and average leaders are struggling.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, nobody leaves your practice and says, oh my gosh, that crown, you know, those margins are so smooth. Nobody leaves your practice and says, oh, Janet is such a great hygienist. She always gets all of the subgingival calculus out from underneath my gums. No, our patients don't have a clue about the quality of the dentistry that we do. That should be just a clear standard of care. We do the very best clinical dentistry. Our patients don't know. What they care about is, did you hurt me? Are you hurting me? Do you see me on time? Do you explain things to me? Shared decision-making has become a sort of a catchword.
Sure is.
Recently, yeah.
And bring me along the journey. Yeah, that's right.
Surveys tell us patients today want two things. They want a relationship with their provider, and they want to feel like they are part of the planning, the planning of their treatment. We hear if there's a problem, it's probably with the dentist. I mean, that's kind of harsh, but I think in any business or any group, whoever is perceived as the leader, the person who ultimately makes the decisions, needs to be a leader. They need to step up and figure out, and if you need coaching, and my opinion is you should always have a coach. If you want to be great at something, get a coach.
Sure.
You can't think of going to the Olympics without having a coach. So if you're struggling, get a coach, get a good coach. And they'll help you develop some of those leadership skills. Now, you know, in a lot of DSOs, the dentist isn't necessarily the leader. It could be the office manager. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, there's so many different business models. So but there needs to be somebody somewhere for people to look up to and say, when I have a problem or a challenge, who do I go to? And where do I feel totally comfortable being able to share my challenges and my concerns? So I think it behooves any dentist to take some sort of a leadership class or get coaching in leadership. It's just going to make your life easier. I know it may be a little uncomfortable when all you want to do is your clinical dentistry. We know that. And for those dentists, it might be better for you to join the DSO, where some of those leadership responsibilities become the response, you know, are the regional operational people. And you can just do your clinical dentistry. Mm-hmm. That's supposedly one of the advantages of working in a DSO. And if it's done right, it works beautifully. So that's, you know, that's something to consider. But if you're a private doctor, you know, if you're a solo practice, then you really need to learn how to be a good leader. And we certainly learned that during COVID, because the doctors, the dentists that showed good leadership. And that's simply, once again, we go back to communication. The ones that communicated with their team regularly, I mean, like almost every day doing mm-hmm. a Zoom call. Okay, guys, here we are. We're still, you know, on lockdown, but what can we do to communicate with our patients? You know, maybe we can be doing some, you know, some sending out some emails just to, you know, reinforce them that we're still here for emergency, whatever. But just keeping in communication. The ones that didn't, that just sat home and waited for something to happen, they're the ones that lost employees once the lockdown was over. So for as many people that lost employees, there were plenty that kept employees.
That's right.
Kept loyal employees. And sometimes, you know, we don't hear about that as much.
No, very well said. Thank you so much. Well, Janet Hagerman, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to link out to your website, and I'll link out to the Selling Dentistry book, Ethically, Elegantly, and Effectively. Mm-hmm. I personally, now that I know you have the Meetings Make Money book, I'm passionate about meetings and agency, so I'm going to read your manual. But thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you jumping on the podcast with me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks, Eric.